Welcome back. It's Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Back in 1967, the movie Guess Who's Coming to Dinner opened across the country. It starred Sidney Poitier, as well as Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy, who played two white liberals whose life is suddenly thrown into turmoil when their daughter comes home with a black doctor and announces they plan to marry.
Poitier, of course, played the black doctor. Here he is in a scene with his white fiancé's father, played by Spencer Tracy.
Would you think it was some kind of cowardice if I told you that no matter how confident you two are, I'm just a little scared?
No, it wouldn't. But you never know. Things are changing.
I have a feeling they're not changing anywhere else quite as fast as they are in my own backyard.
But it wasn't my idea that everything be settled so quickly. Your daughter said that there's no problem. She said, my dad is a lifelong fighting liberal who loathes race prejudice and has spent his whole life fighting against discrimination. She said, my parents, well, they'll welcome me with open arms. And I said, oh, I sure want to meet them.
In tackling the subject of interracial marriage, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner took on a hugely controversial subject in the late 60s. Now a play based on the movie is on stage at the Huntington Theater in Boston.
It stars Malcolm Jamal Warner, who's best known for his role as Theo Huxtable in the popular TV program The Cosby Show. When he came in earlier today, we asked him what attracted him to the role of Dr. John Prentice in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
First and foremost, it's a Sidney Poitier role. So that was the biggest attraction. And obviously it's not a role where I'm trying to do what he did with it, because that would be too intimidating. But it's great to be able to, play a role that was such, in a film that was such an iconic film, and to be able to, bring my stuff to it. But I have a special affinity for the 60s anyway. Mm. My father named me after Malcolm X and Ahmaud Jamal. My father was very active in the civil rights movement. So from a little boy, the books and things that he made me read were really about the 60s.
Interesting. This play, based on a 1967 movie about race, how does it still resonate today?
What's really interesting, what we found with a lot of audience members, is they were able to see how this particular story about an interracial relationship transcended just different races. Someone made the comment that you could take this story and make it about a same-sex couple, and it would still resonate. A Christian and a Muslim, and the story would still work. So I think Todd Kreidler, the playwright, and David S. Bjornson, our director, together really did some work in being able to take this story but make it universal.
Well, we have a clip from the Huntington production, and I want to play it. This is a scene early in the play where your white fiance, Joanna Drayton, played by Meredith Forlenza, has brought you home to meet her parents, but she hasn't told them this crucial piece of information, namely that you're black. So here's the scene where Joanna's mother, played by Julia Duffy, sees you for the first time and begins to understand what's going on.
Mom, this is John, and Dr. Prentice. I'm so pleased to meet you.
I am pleased to meet you, Mrs. Drayton. Now, I can tell by the look on your face that Joanna has busted out with the big news.
Well, she has told me a great deal, Doctor.
Mrs. Drayton, I am medically qualified, so I hope you don't think it presumptuous if I say you ought to sit down.
Yeah, busted out with the big news and you need to sit down.
You ought to sit down, yeah.
I would love to play a scene from the great movie, the 1967 movie, starring Katharine Hepburn, Spencer Tracy, and Sidney Poitier, who plays your character, of course, Dr. John Prentice. So here's Poitier in a pivotal scene with his father, played by Roy E. Glenn, who has just tried to make the case that marrying a white woman isn't practical in this day and age. Mm-hmm. And here's how your character, played by Poitier, responds.
You are 30 years older than I am. You and your whole lousy generation believes the way it was for you is the way it's got to be. And not until your whole generation has lain down and died will the dead weight of you be off our backs. You understand? You've got to get off my back.
Boy, that is some powerful scene.
Oh, yeah.
I got to ask you about that, though. And you mentioned, you know, the huge role that Poitier played. But how present is the way he played that role in your mind when you're on the stage at the Huntington?
And not at all.
Oh, really?
No.
Really? That's fascinating.
Yeah, because we have a, you know, in 67, they had to tread rather lightly on the subject matter.
Yeah.
Because of the social and racial climate at the time. What we have an opportunity to do in 2014 and on stage is, you know, the characters get to take deeper emotional journeys.
Yeah.
So I had room to go a little further and not have to treat everything with kid gloves.
Interesting. Of course, it's a play about race, but in listening to that scene and in the play that you do, we're reminded that it's also a play about generational differences in
sure,
a big way, right?
Sure. John Prentice, though he's, you know, a worldly accomplished doctor, we find that approval, and particularly parental approval, is very important to him. So what resonated with me with the character was that it was almost in some sense a coming of age piece for this man who, you know, at some point along the line has to let go of needing his father's approval and having to stand up to his father, as you just heard in that scene.
I read that your own father at one time, and I hope it's okay if I bring this up, told you that if you married a white girl, he wouldn't come to your wedding. So this is a theme, obviously, on many levels that resonates with you.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is, in one of the talk back discussions, there was a black woman in the audience who said, well, you know, it's not like we want our sons to come home with white women.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thinking of not necessarily wanting to mix races, it comes from both sides of the table. My father did make that comment when I was a little boy, but he's definitely, you know, changed his stance through the years.
Well, people change as the times change. If you'll allow me, I've got to ask you a little bit about The Cosby Show, because here you are sitting in front of me. How did you get the role of Theo Huxtable?
Audition.
Audition.
Yeah, it
was. Do you audition. Remember anything about that?
I remember everything about it. Initially, my agent submitted me for the role, but they were not interested because they were looking for a 6'2", 15-year-old, and I was a 5'5", 13-year-old. Months later, they still had not cast the role, and my agent submitted me again. And I was literally, this was Good Friday, 1984. My agent convinced them to wait for me. This is the end of the day. So they waited till about 6:30 p.m. for me to actually get there to the audition. So I was literally the last person they saw.
Wow.
And I went into the audition. I read the character like I saw young kids on TV. Precocious, kind of smart alecky. And I'm in the audition, and I'm hitting all the beats. I'm killing in the room. You know, I'm killing it. And everybody's laughing at all the right places. And when I was done, I look up at Mr. Cosby, and he's got his face in his hand, and he's, you know, looking at me. He says, now, would you really talk to your father like that? And I said, no. And he said, well, I don't want to see that on the show. He said, you go back out there, you work on it, and you come back and you bring me something else.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a scene from that pilot episode of The Cosby Show, which aired 30 years ago tomorrow, by the way. And in this scene, your character, Theo, has just come home with a bad report card. And here you are trying to reason with your father, Cliff, played, of course, by Bill Cosby.
You're a doctor and mom's a lawyer. And you're both successful in everything, and that's great. But maybe I was born to be a regular person and have a regular life. If you weren't a doctor, I wouldn't love you less because you're my dad. And so, instead of acting disappointed because I'm not like you, maybe you can just accept who I am and love me anyway because I'm your son.
Theo? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
What I love about that scene and a lot of the scenes between you and Bill Cosby, and one of the things that I think made this such a successful show, is it does portray the struggle between the generations really interestingly. Yeah, you know, we were just talking about it and guess who's coming to dinner.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I think you and he did so well together was, I always came away from watching that show thinking, I think, you know, Bill Cosby and Malcolm Jamal Warner have a really interesting sort of father-son-like relationship in real life.
That means we did our job.
You know, I think you did.
Yeah. The thing I always have to point out is Mr. Cosby had five kids of his own.
I see.
And, you know, I had a mother and father of my own. And my father was very instrumental in my raising. He was a very integral part of my growing up.
Yeah.
And Ennis Cosby, Mr. Cosby's son, and I were really good friends. So Mr. Cosby was always very willing to share his wisdom and his experiences to anyone who was willing to listen. And I just happened to be, you know, the cat who was really willing to listen and wanted to listen. Because my mother, before the Cosby Show, my mother used to always use Bill Cosby as an example when she was impressing the importance upon education. You know, he went back and got his doctorate when he didn't have to. Mm-hmm. He was already famous and was already rich. He didn't
right
have
here
to
in
go
Massachusetts,
back and do that.
He got in that doctorate.
Yeah. So there was definitely a mentor relationship there. I say a mentor and a friendship there that has lasted long past the show, and I can definitely say for more than half of my life.
Wow. You've done a lot since those days. Of course, we're talking to you about a role right here in Boston that you're playing as an actor. You have a music career. To many, you will always be Theo Huxtable, and I'm wondering if that's a blessing or a curse or a bit of both.
It's kind of funny, because I always say, the example I use is people still call Ron Howard Opie.
Yeah, that's right.
And it hasn't hurt his career one bit. But I do, you know, it's funny, because I guess people think it's a compliment when they say, you will always be Theo to me, which, you know, it sounds like, I don't care whatever else you do, none of that really matters. You're really Theo to me. I'm going to disregard everything you've done since that show. You're going to be Theo. You know, being called Theo all the time would probably bother me more if I hadn't done so much work. But even when we were doing the show, at the height of the show, my focus was always life after.
Mm-hmm.
Theo is not going to be, this is not going to be the end all be all of my career. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be more than Theo. So I like being called Malcolm.
All right. Well, Malcolm, not Theo, who's performing in Guess Who's Coming In Here at the Huntington. Let me ask, let me close with a final question about that. Has your thinking about this play changed at all as you've been acting in it?
Definitely. I mean, you know, I did the production in D.C. back in December. With a different cast.
Yeah.
So coming to Boston and doing it with a different cast, there are always new things to learn. The beauty of live theater is I still get aha moments on stage.
Mm.
And I love the fact that I can come back the next night and employ what I learned the night before and see how that affects the journey of the character.
It's a wonderful thing about live theater, isn't it? I mean, that living relationship between the stage and the audience.
Yeah, because it's live theater is its own living, breathing thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's never the same two nights in a row.
Well, that's Malcolm Jamal Warner. He plays Dr. John Prentice in the Huntington Theater Company's production of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, which runs through October 5th. There's a lot more information at radioboston.org. Malcolm Jamal Warner, such a pleasure to meet you, and thank you for coming in.
Anthony, thank you for having me.
Well, what a great way to end the week. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station.
A lot of great people behind the scenes make this show possible, including Amory Sievertson, Alex Kingsbury, Emma Jean Weinstein, Kathleen McNerney. We also had help today from Virginia Marshall.
Tim Skog is our technical director. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again Monday. Have a great weekend. Join us again for more Radio Boston.